This podcast was recorded at the 2009 CUPE National Convention.
Sisters and brothers, we have an order of the day, and I ask you to take your seats, and it's a great, great privilege for me to introduce an activist, a leader, and a staunch supporter and friend of CUPE. My friend, my colleague, my brother, Ken Lewenza, the national president of the Canadian Auto Workers. Brother Ken Lewenza was acclaimed as president during a special convention of the auto workers held in September 2008, re-elected to a three-year term in August 2009. Ken was born and raised in the great city of Windsor, Ontario, and has been a member, there's the Windsor crowd, has been a member of CAW Local 444 since he began working for Chrysler Canada in 1972 at the age of 18. He became president of his local in 1994, served as an executive board member on the CAW Council for 10 years prior to his election as national president. Ken has a strong connection with his community. The Motor City Credit Union, the Hotel Jew Hospital Board, the AIDS Committee of Windsor, the United Way of Windsor, Essex County. Ken Lewenza is a man and a brother of deep principles. He came into his presidency at one of the most turbulent times in the history of auto workers in Canada. Bargaining is tough at the best of times for all of us, but bargaining publicly with the media and so many others stacked against you is a hard, hard task. In this climate, Brother Ken Lewenza said that what he was going through with the auto workers this past spring touched the heart and soul of what the union stands for, protecting its members. He also said something regarding CAW bargaining that I believe hits at the heart of what is essential for us in CUPE as well. Brother Lewenza said, at a time when the community needed to be together, there was division. We have a lot more work to do. People need to understand the connection between our jobs and the community. And I couldn't have put that better myself. I had the great privilege in August of attending the CAW convention in Quebec City and greeting the delegates from the CAW on behalf of our union. I had the great privilege to walk on the picket line in Windsor on many, many occasions, including with Brother Ken Lewenza, who took on the mayor, who took on the media, and who stood rock solid with our members in the city of Windsor. Sisters and brothers, you're in for a great treat this morning. Welcome our friend, my brother, Ken Lewenza.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Relax. The last time I got up at a podium at the CAW convention, I went on for 3 hours. I'll try not to do that. I recognize that would be a challenge, and Paul has indicated to me to be more discreet based on the work that CUPE has. But before I begin my comments, let me begin by saying how incredibly privileged I feel to be here at the CUPE convention. How privileged I am to be with my mentor and the founding president of the Canadian Auto Workers Union, Bob White. Here, here. Here, here. And I emphasize mentor because he may be retired, but he continues to be the social conscience of the Canadian Auto Workers Union. He continues to inspire. He continues to build confidence in young people to work in the trade union movement based on social principles and political activism. So, Bob, it's great to see you. It's even better to see the advocate and the former representative of CUPE, Marilyn White. Some of you may or may not know, there's the odd discussion and on debates within the House of Labour. Sometimes the CAW periodically has those debates. And I can tell you that Marilyn represents CUPE as well as anybody can represent CUPE at those particular debates. So it's good to see Marilyn. And, of course, I see Nancy Rich And it's great to see her again. She was one hell of a leader in the Canadian Labour Congress, and the work that she did on behalf of women, on behalf of minorities, is steadfast today in terms of our commitment to equality. So, Nancy, it's great to see you. And last but not least, this might tell you my age, it's great to see Judy Darcy also. I mean, Judy Darcy and I go back a long way. I can remember when the labor movement was going to change the world, and Judy was part of that plan. And she looks darn good today, more relaxed than she did when we were taking on the world. But I do want to recognize Judy Darcy for her contribution to the labor movement and for her friendship in the CAW over many years. I also, obviously, I want to thank very much Paul and Claude, and also the Executive Council that's here today. And most importantly, my appreciation to Paul for his leadership at the Canadian Labour Congress level, for his mentoring when I went on to CLC. Most people will know I was a rank-and-file leader, didn't play a huge role at the Ontario Federation of Labour in the CLC. I moved into the position as a national president as a rank-and-file leader, and the mentoring of Paul and the advice of Paul and his ability to get to the root of the issues that are facing working people is incredible. And I just say to you, Paul, it's been a pleasure working with you. To you, Claude, I thank you for inviting me to this convention, and I consider it an incredible privilege. To the rank and file members, to the leadership in the room, this is where I'm most comfortable. I can tell you I've been in more board meetings in the last 14 months, talking to more CEOs, talking to more of those folks that want all the power without giving back to our communities and our country. And I'm always comfortable talking to rank-and-file trade union activists, social activists, political activists. All three of those issues are important for the movement to move forward. Trade union activism, social activism, political activism. There's a connection in all three. And if you miss one of the three, then quite frankly, we're not representing the interests of our members in our country, which we have a responsibility to do. I also want to raise that Paul gave a great speech at our Constitutional Convention in Quebec. But Paul hasn't just given a speech to CAW members at the Constitutional Convention. Paul was the first guest that I invited to our CAW Council, the Parliament of our union, as we try to reach out and build relationships with the labor movement, build relationships with those coalition members that support trade union values, social activism, and political activism, those that have a common goal to represent the interests of our members, and Paul does that well. And I'm honored to be here and return the favor, and I don't call it a favor. Anytime you can get me out of a meeting with Ford Motor Company this week is a pleasure, believe me. And so, let me just be clear. This is an incredible time for workers, the workers' movement in Canada and around the world. It's a time of full of promise because so many of the things we've been saying about the system have proven to be true. It is failing before our eyes. The cracks in the foundation of global capitalism have seldom been as clear as they are today. After all, they pretty well got everything they asked for. Free trade, balanced budgets, lower taxes, privatization, deregulation, more power to business than at any time in the history of humanity. And all of us in this particular room, and those of us that took on these particular issues, free trade, deregulation, privatization, it's proving each and every minute of every day moving forward that the position of the labor movement was the right position moving forward. And those that said we would have a more sincere and more committed country as a result of those policies are dead wrong. And what did it get us? Crisis, collapse, bankruptcy, global recession, the first truly global recession in a world GDP since the end of Second World War. That's right. The right-wing neoliberal agenda brought us not prosperity as promised, not stability as promised, and not efficiencies, but chaos, insecurity, and mass unemployment at the time that you are at your convention here today. This is a chance to call it out. This is a chance to expose the failures of the Steve Harpin's view of the world. That is our opportunity. And I know Paul probably raised this in his speech, and if he hasn't, this is not the Stephen Harper of a minority government if he was ever given the power of a majority government. We have to understand the Stephen Harper under a majority government would bring the policies of the National Action Coalition, the Citizens Coalition against workers, against social progress. This guy has had his hands tied under this government to the degree that he is not having his agenda moving forward. So it's important that we recognize this. But there's also a time of great danger, because we know that the rich and powerful to run this system have no shame. They will use this crisis and the fear and insecurity which workers naturally feel try to weaken us even further, to actually retrench their business-dominated vision. Can you believe that? We are in this mess precisely because of globalization and deregulation and privatization. And what is their recipe for fixing it? More globalization, more deregulation, and more privatization. It sounds insane, and it is. But make no mistake, corporate leaders, right-wing think tanks, and politicians like Stephen Harper are ready to make the most of this crisis. Their question is, why waste a good crisis? They're saying that to themselves, believe me, as we sit in this convention and debate progressive policies versus driving people backwards. Has anyone read the book called The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein? We featured it at our convention documents this summer. It's great stuff and it's great reading, and I would encourage the delegates to read the book. This is exactly what you predicted. The powerful always takes advantage of moments of fear and panic to push through the agenda they had in their back pocket all along. They will pit worker against worker to enforce their agenda. QP members and CAW members have already seen this big time. We were on the receiving end of two of the most vicious anti-worker, anti-union propaganda offenses you have ever seen. For us, it was the wave of hatred and envy against auto workers that came along with the auto bankruptcy and the government aid package. For you, it was the ugly, vicious attacks on your members in Toronto and in Windsor who were forced into striking to defend their contract, nothing more. But they were faced with vicious attacks. CAW members and QP members, private sector and public sector. But one thing was the same. A great big finger was pointed at the supposedly greedy unions as if we caused the problem in the first place. CAW members weren't greedy. We weren't asking for more. We were just trying to hold on to what we had been promised in return for our decades of hard work. Trying to hold on to our pensions, for example. Imagine that. Our members work 30 years in return for a promise of a pension. The company and the government want to take it away. And we are somehow greedy for saying no. A promise is a promise. We fought back. We rallied 15,000 people at Queen's Park. We occupied MPP's office. And we told both the company and the government to go to hell. And when I say we fought back and put 15,000 people in the legislature in a seven-day period, there was members from every affiliated union in the province of Ontario, including the Ontario Sid Ryan, who spoke at that convention on behalf of pensioners that were fighting for their protection and income. At the end of the day, we protected our pension, every single dollar. We weren't greedy. We weren't asking for more. It was the bosses who were reaching. It was the bosses who were aggressive. It was the bosses who caused the confrontation, but trying to shift the burden of the crisis onto our shoulders. But we are the workers. We didn't cause this crisis. They caused this crisis. Same thing for QP members. You didn't create the fiscal crisis of the cities in Ontario. Government caused it. And the private sector economy caused it through their financial casino, which predictably fell apart. I read the documents that are presented to you today. And again, you describe it as a deck of cards. We have so much in common in terms of the policy papers that a QP has put forward for debate and discussion this weekend, similar to the CAW's papers moving forward. So we have so much in common in terms of fighting for the interests of our members, our communities, and our country. You weren't greedy. You weren't asking for more. It was the employer asking for more. Yet QP members became the scapegoat, the convenient enemy, someone to hate. That finger-pointing takes all the attention away from the true problem, weak fiscal policy, our over-reliance on the casino economy. In fact, your description is the deck of cards. But why get into all of that when you could just point the big finger at workers and say, it's all their fault, it's all our fault. Make us pay. Make them pay. That's all I've heard in the last few months during this financial global crisis through no fault of workers. The media and right-wing opportunist politicians with a pulse will jump on that bandwagon. And that's why workers have to have their own storyline. We need to have an analysis of the crisis. What caused it? Its consequences. How to fix the damage. Above all, how to prevent it from happening again. Because believe me, brothers and sisters, it will happen again. And I'll just get off text for a minute. I think we got to analyze in a real way what took place. I listened to the brother at the mic that said it was difficult to change the public perception. We've got to figure a way how to get out and reach out to the communities and talk to our members. So the struggles of QP members in the last couple of months, both in Windsor and Toronto and other areas throughout the country, have to be an example of us to analyze and say, what can we do better and what didn't we do appropriately and how do we move the agenda for workers from one end of this country to the other? And let me just emphasize, in the city of Windsor, and I've got a heartbeat for the city of Windsor, obviously that's my hometown. Obviously, I believe it's an incredible labor community. It's committed to the community. Without the labor movement of the city of Windsor, it would be a much different community. And we're seeing that today through the United Way, through hospice, through so many not-for-profit organizations that are suffering the same pain as auto workers and other workers in the community. But brothers and sisters, we have to talk to each other. Because Gary Parent, the former president of the Windsor District Labor Council, in partnership with your leadership in the community, was front and center defending the interest of the workers. Yet the public turned on the workers. And I said to Gary, and I want to be honest with people in the room, we point all the targets at the municipal politicians, and the mayor of that community deserves a target on his back, and he deserves the challenges of the labor movement. But the labor movement has got to look in the mirror and say, how could this mayor have so much power over a labor community? How is it that we couldn't convince our own members on the interest of public service, public sector workers, and free collective bargaining? How is it that that guy could get on the radio every single day in the community of Windsor and literally assault QP members and those that provide services to our community and provide service in a way that the private sector can't possibly do it? And I say to Mr. Eddie Francis and to the community that that fight in our community is far from over. What it reminds me is we got to educate our members. We got to mobilize our members. We got to make sure that a fight with QP or a fight with CAW or a fight with any other affiliate is fighting all of us. And that's the conscience that we have to put in the homes of every unionized member in this country and in our communities. If we all do is sit back and tighten our belts and pray for a better day, then maybe the financial industry will reinflate. The TSX is already up 50% since March, as if I know a lot about the TSX. They think the recovery is already here. The Bay Street economists are all cheering for the recovery because they're going to get big, fat bonuses this year. Just imagine this, brothers and sisters, at a time where they're asking for major concessions and restraints and downloading onto workers each and every day in the most vulnerable. The big six banks have already set aside $7 billion for executive bonuses this fiscal year. Can you believe that, brothers and sisters? $7 billion set aside for executive bonuses. We can't seem to find the money to ensure that if you're unemployed in this country, you can collect EI benefits. But bank executives can pay themselves $7 billion. But as a society, we can find $7 billion for bankers. Just think of the contradiction, brothers and sisters, to that kind of economic prosperity for bankers and the challenges we have. That is sinful. And I'd be lying to you to suggest I'm a religious person, but that is sinful. I want to compliment your union for the fine policy paper you're reviewing today. I mentioned it earlier. I read it. It's so much in common with the policy papers of the Canadian Auto Workers Union. It is so well written, and I compliment those that are behind the program. It's first rate. In fact, it sounds, like I said, almost like our own policy papers that debated and passed in Quebec. But you know what, brothers and sisters? That's a great sign. I got in my note, it's a good sign. It's a great sign. That means we have more in common than most would suggest. Let me quote from your own paper on page 5. Workers and unions did not cause this crisis. The free market economic policies of the last 3 decades paved the way for the collapse. That's all you need to know about economics, brothers and sisters, and that's all I know is that paragraph. We didn't cause the crisis. They did. And we sure as hell are not going to pay for that crisis. Which is why we will keep organizing and fighting and bargaining and, yes, striking until the blame gets assigned where the blame belongs. Greedy, immoral financial executives who were gambling with other people's money. Corporate executives have no loyalty to anything other than the bottom line, and government officials who let them get away with it. Let me tell you about a labor confrontation that didn't get nearly as much attention as the auto rescue or the civic strikes in Toronto and Windsor. It just came to a conclusion last week. It was 300 warehouse workers, member of the CAW, against Zellers in a community of Scarborough. Now, why didn't this confrontation make any headlines? Perhaps because the workers didn't fit the fat cat stereotype so many seem to have about trade union members. The top rate, imagine, was $23 an hour if you worked in that workplace for 30 years. That's barely a living wage. And I know there's members in this room today that make less than $23 an hour, and you could understand this argument better than anybody can understand it. Try supporting a family at $23 an hour. I don't think I have to tell you how difficult. It's not easy. Zellers demanded an $8 an hour pay cut. $15 is definitely not a living wage. You can't support a family on $15 an hour, and everybody in this room understands that and recognizes that. And Zeller locked out our members unless they accepted the roll packs, no strings attached. Over 2 months, 2 full months on the picket line, we blocked the warehouses. Not just in Ontario, we went to British Columbia, we went to Quebec. Wherever Zellers had a presence, the Canadian Auto Workers and its friends and its affiliates in each province in those prospective communities came together to block warehouses. We bought billboards. We highlighted Zellers. You may or may not know, Zellers is the Olympic sponsors. And we said to Zellers, we have no problem, you might have remembered, when Molson moved out of the province of Ontario, we rented this big bus and we put a wonderful sign on it. And every place where Molson's had a presence, we drove this bus into the community until we got their recognition that workers were entitled to severance pay. And we told Zellers, we're buying that bus and we're going to be putting on an advertisement campaign during those Olympics that are second to none if, in fact, we can't get a collective agreement. We fought back. We fought back everywhere we could, and we used the power and the strength of the overall CAW membership, and we reached out to affiliates, CUPE and other affiliates in the organization, in our union, to provide the support, and they came through in spades. It wasn't a pretty picture, not about economic necessity. Zeller's private equity executives admitted publicly that their profits have doubled, and soon they wanted to spin it off to IPOs to make quick buck on their paper markets. That's what they're interested in, not in running a real business and providing real jobs. But the things that was incredible and that inspired me to no end was the incredible staying power of those 300 members. Their jobs were on the line, but they stuck with it. And the courage of the city workers in the city of Windsor and the courage of the city workers in Toronto were just as inspiring as those 300 members of Zellers who took on their boss against the attack of so many just to win some justice. We reached a settlement last week. Not a pretty picture, like I said, but night and day, better than what Zellers thought they could dictate to us without free collective bargaining. My point is, fighting back makes a difference. That's our motto. But QP members have proved it over and over again. And I emphasize the Toronto and Windsor debate. Together, we are on the right track here, telling our members and the public where the crisis came from, showing them that the concessions won't solve the crisis. In fact, concessions will make it worse. Organizing ourselves to prevent the blame and the burden from being shifted onto our shoulders. And I think that's what the brother said at the second last speaker at the mic, organize ourselves to prevent the blame. And fighting at the bargaining table and in the political arena for better contracts, for better policies, to protect our members and all working people. That's how we come out of this crisis, stronger than when we went in. The labor movement did it in the 30s. They developed their own story. They fought back in creative ways, and they become stronger after a decade of crisis that they were at the beginning. We can tell our own stories, brothers and sisters. Our own generation could be the next good story. The next generation could talk about resistance. The next generation could be talking about sacrifices we make to represent the interests of our members to the very best of our ability. That's incredible when you think of it. I believe history can repeat itself, and that history starts right here, right now. Brothers and sisters, I want to emphasize in my closing remarks that Canada needs both good-paying unionized private sector jobs and a comprehensive public services, universal public services, how they're intertwined for a healthy and prosperous community. The public sector can't survive without a healthy private sector. The private sector can't survive without a healthy public sector. And together, we can make a difference on not only the lives of our members, their families, and our community, but our country. We also need to support the CLC, our federations of labor, and our labor councils, because no one union can win these battles. We can only win them by working together. And I want to say to the delegates here today, especially those from Ontario, we take the central labor body serious. We respect the central labor bodies, and we're doing everything in our power to negotiate an arrangement to go back into the Ontario Federation of Labor. It may take a little longer than I anticipated, but I anticipate it happening, because the labor movement is stronger when we're working together, when we're fighting the bosses together. We know that in collective bargaining, when you have a divided membership, you can't win the boss. The same thing applies to unions. When unions become isolated in themselves, then they find the challenges even greater, and the defense of our members becomes more worrisome. So, brothers and sisters, I want to say one more time, people say to me every single day, boy, did you take this job at the right time. And you know what, brothers and sisters? I did take this job at the right time. I took it at a time. I took it at a time where our members need leadership. I took it at a time where leadership needs to be inspired by those that work on the ground. And I come to these conventions not to inspire you, not to lecture you, because when I leave here, I'm going to be inspired to defend our unions, defend workers from one end of the country to the other, regardless of what your affiliation is. I'm going to defend political progress, social progress. And just imagine, today you are in a convention hall of your largest delegation ever in QP's history. And we got an army of 2,500 people in this audience today that at the conclusion of this week is going to commit themselves to the best representation we can provide our members, which is obviously a priority in each of our affiliated unions. But we must expand our activism, brothers and sisters, because if people think in this room you can discuss your paper and have good debate and generate a lot of enthusiasm in this room and don't take it back to your locals and don't take it back to your communities and your province and your country, we will continue this incredible defense of what we deserved based on our work. So, brothers and sisters, I leave here today thanking the QP leadership, Paul and Claude for their leadership, the Executive Council for their incredible work. But I leave here more important than ever, saying to the rank and file leadership of our union, whether it's QP, whether it's CAW, whether it's any other affiliate, the work gets done at the ground. The work gets done at your level. You push the envelope as far as you can. And when you push that envelope as far as you can, you're going to inspire your leadership to push the envelope farther than they can push that envelope. And as long as we're pushing that envelope together, we will be a better trade union movement, and we will protect the interests of our members, we'll protect the interests of our communities, and we'll protect the interests of our countries. Thank you, brothers and sisters.
Yeah, yeah. Good job, buddy.
Get him, goddammit!
Brother Lorenzo, delegates, Ken said that he was inspired by you, and I know he is inspired by you, but Brother Ken, you have inspired the delegates to the 24th Constitutional Convention of the Canadian Union of Public Employees, and I thank you for that. And I want to present to Ken his request that we not give him personally a gift, but we make a donation in the name of CUPE to the hospice in Windsor and Essex County. And I thank you, brother, on behalf of all of CUPE.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
This podcast was recorded at the 2009 CUPE National Convention.